You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
It was a Friday night, I woke alone to get the feeling right. We started making out and she took off my pants, but then I turned on the TV, and that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23, and I saw more of you's my TV shows. What the hell is ADD? My friends say I should act my age. What's my age again?
What's up, guys? Welcome into another bonus episode of Two P's. It's very exciting that you joined us and that we have another episode coming out for you guys, but that's almost as exciting as the guests I have on tonight, because it's Dan from Netflix and Swill, who I love just in general as a human. We've met in person, and he's become a friend of mine. He's been on the show. Dan, you're going to have to tell me. I think this is number 6, right?
No, this is, I did the count. I think this is 7.
Oh, okay. So it's number 7. I knew you were in the Five Timers Club.
All right, so one thing I want to say, I don't know why you're excited, because I am like low energy as fuck.
No, you're you though, and you're I don't know. You have this kind of like biting, cynical humor that I really like.
Well, I mean that's because that's what I've had to become. Like before, I used to be like the Dane Cook of our friend group.
Okay,
which was basically just like I would scream things at people, and then that would be considered funny because I was yelling it. And now it's like, I actually have to like calm the fuck down and be like a normal human being for once in my life.
Well, you're doing good things. And I mean, I guess it's almost like perfect, because what are we counting down today? We're doing the top 5 what?
I don't know. People can read the episode. Top 5 Netflix original movies.
Netflix original movies. Help me out here, because you messaged me the other day and we were chatting, and you said that our anniversary is coming up in terms of the first time you came on the show. So what was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, about 2 years ago. I have to look it up on Apple Podcasts right now to tell you what it was.
It was a very, very early bonus episode. I remember it because it was before I was even inserting clips and stuff. Like, I was still new to the game.
Bonus episode 4. I know that for sure.
There you go. So if you guys want to go back and listen, there you go. I didn't even realize that. But bonus episode number 4 from a couple years ago, Dan and I did the Netflix original shows, which now would be a vastly different list.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about it then, which, like you said, has been a couple of years, about doing a Netflix original movies countdown. And here we are. I mean, you're at Netflix and Swill with Caleb, and it's a show I love. I'm a patron over there, and you guys are awesome. I love both you guys, and I love hearing you guys together. I don't listen if you guys are talking about something I haven't seen. And the problem in my life right now is I don't see anything. Because of the newborn, which you know. But being a Netflix guy, I mean, was this list, narrowing it down to 5, was that hard for you? Or were you like immediately like, okay, here's my 5?
Top 3 I knew immediately. And I knew exactly what order they would be in. It was the next 7. Because I have a list of... Because as you know, Gerald, when we do these top 5 lists, I like to round it out and do a top 10 for my honorable mentions.
Oh, man. You know what? I do that too. Have you heard?
I've never heard that before in my life. So, like, it became, like, structuring the other 7 into some order, and I think I've got it. And I'm sure I'm going to forget something. Mm-hmm. I've considered probably about 15 total movies for this list.
Okay.
I will say I am not considering anything from 2019, so my current favorite of 2019 being The Perfection. It probably would have hit my honorable mentions list, but that's about it.
Well, let's go ahead, since you mentioned that. This is going to be a spoiler-filled episode, just because I don't want to worry about not being able to talk about at least movies on my list. Some of them I've seen recently. Some of them I haven't seen in a while, and actually probably in a year or two on a couple of them. So it's going to be like recollecting it a little bit. But just a couple tidbits. So we're doing the top 5 Netflix original movies. A couple things I wanted to mention up front, Dan, and I don't know if you want to tell me. If I don't mention something that you want to put a little asterisk on too, but We did decide that we can include documentary films.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you did, but we can.
I absolutely I was going to fight you on that we were going to have to do.
Well,
that.
You know, I feel like in a couple of years we could probably do a top five documentary films too. So I could see why. I don't know. There's one on my list. I'll just spoiler alert. There's one on my list
as well.
So we'll talk about that. And then the other asterisk that I just found out about, man, was that Annihilation, I guess, is in some circles a Netflix original. Do you want to talk about that? Because we decided not to include it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Everyone wants to complain about Netflix saying, like, oh, they just promote numbers to their shows that are doing well, which they actually back up during their stockholders meetings, which means those numbers have to be truthful. But the most disingenuous practice that Netflix engages in is when they label things that they have distribution rights to only, like they didn't have any production rights to, they only have distribution rights to, they label them as Netflix originals. Mm-hmm. So with Annihilation, that was released here in America in theaters, and thinking like, I don't know where else it was released in theaters, but in other parts of the world, specifically Australia, Warner Brothers didn't think it would do so well. So they just were like, oh, do you want the rights to this? And Netflix was like, fuck yeah, we'll take content. And they got it. So in Australia, it's considered a Netflix original. In here, I own a 4K Blu-ray of it. Okay. So,
yeah, same here.
I mean, and Annihilation is just like the highest profile example of that. There are plenty of other movies that are just like that.
All right. Because I'll tell you right now, I mean, Annihilation was one of my favorite movies of the year last year. And if it was a Netflix original, it would definitely have been my favorite Netflix movie of the year last year. So when I heard that, I was like, what? Back up a second. And we didn't include it. And we can include documentaries. It sounds like we both have one on our list each. So
I wonder if it's the same.
I do too, actually. I don't think it is, though. Because I think I know. Well, I mean, maybe. I just never heard you talk about the one that I picked. So I don't know. We'll see. All right. So you want to get started? I'm going to let you go first with your number five Netflix original film. This is as of August 2019, by the way. So,
like I said, I'm already discounting 2019 movies in the first place. There's a bunch of movies in the second half, or even probably in the fourth quarter of 2019, that are just going to be insane for Netflix to have. So this is before all that. So that's why you're not seeing any of those. And I'll leave it at that. And actually, speaking of my number five movie and the director of that movie, that is Noah Baumbach. He is doing Marriage Story, but his original movie that was for Netflix, Gerald, you actually came on to do a review for.
Mm-hmm.
This is 2017's The Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected.
Wow, this is under your top five.
Oh my God, I love this movie.
Do you remember what you rated it on that app? Because I didn't feel like you rated that super high, but maybe you did.
No, I think it was like a 4 out of 5.
Okay, well, that is good.
Yeah, I think it's a great movie, mainly because, like, up to that point on Netflix, the only Adam Sandler stuff you had was, like, Ridiculous Six, The Do-Over, Sandy Wexler, and you're just like, I fucking hate these movies. Why did you do them? And then you look at the numbers and you're like, okay, I understand why you did them. But this one, Sandler isn't Sandler. Sandler's actually acting in this movie, which is impressive, because, like, whenever Sandler actually acts in a movie, he's a good actor, and you got it here. Like, Ben Stiller, also acting in this movie, also trying. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you have Sandler and Stiller trying, and they're doing very well at it. Dustin Hoffman's great. I felt like
he's good.
He would have gotten a supporting actor nom at the Oscars, possibly, but his Me Too thing came up around that time.
Oh, and yeah, that's right.
So I think that sank his campaign, personally. But you know, I just love the family dynamic that they have. Like, everyone's just kind of like their own form of crazy. You know, Adam Sandler is a raging lunatic sometimes. He's a very normal, calm guy, and then it gets real bombastic and loud. You see that in his first scene. Stiller is like he paints himself as the black sheep, but he's not really. He's like trying to kind of be the glue that keeps the family together. Hoffman is just, he's this insufferable man.
Right.
But he's just so great in this role. It's wonderful. I mean, even Emma Thompson's in this movie, and she's his aloof girlfriend. And she's wonderful. Like, everyone's just so perfectly cast in this movie. I love it. I love what Baumbach did here, and I can't wait for Marriage Story.
I remember thinking it was okay. I don't remember how I referred to it on the episode that I was on with you and Caleb. Who was the daughter in that? Because I remember I really, really liked her performance.
That's a good question, and I believe she was in something else Netflix has
right,
done.
I feel like she was an up-and-coming actress, or maybe still is, and we talked about her at length on that episode, but I thought she did really, really well in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, she's up against Adam Sandler and Ben Stiller trying, and Dustin Hoffman and Emma Thompson, so I think she did great.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised, though. I didn't see that one. I didn't see you pulling that one out, but the Meyerowitz Stories is your number five. All right, well, look, man, I think, and this is like so like kind of eerie, to be honest, but I feel like we talked about this one on that episode, I think. But my number five is The Babysitter. It is a horror comedy, and I am a horror fanatic. There are two, you could argue three horrors on my list, but this is the first of three.
I think we talked about it, but we didn't like review it fully. I think you were just saying like, man, I love this movie, Samara
right,
Weaving.
Right, right.
And look who's going to be in a movie this month. Samara Weaving is going to be in Knives Out.
Right, right. And this...
Or no, not Knives
not
Out.
Not Knives Out. She's going to be in Hide and Seek. Or not Hide and Seek.
The Hide and Seek movie.
But anyway, it's just funny, man. Bella Thorne's in there. Andrew Bachelor plays like the comic relief. And I haven't seen this in a couple of years, but I just remember every time he was on screen was just hilarious. Ken Marino's in there as the dad. Mm-hmm. It's just funny, man. It's like, you know, she has to babysit this kid, and she's obviously the hot babysitter, so everybody's attracted to her, including me. But anyway, she's babysitting this kid, and it turns out that she is going to sacrifice, you know, use him as a human sacrifice for this cult that she's in secretly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing it at his home on the night that she's babysitting him. And the kid, you know, is trying to elude her throughout the episode. And, you know, all these different scenarios started happening. And there's a lot of really cool kills in the movie. And, you know, there's that, you remember the one scene where he's like trapped under the house or whatever?
Yeah.
And she goes under there looking for him. It's very claustrophobic. And then he kind of comes up. I can't remember if it was fireworks or.
Yeah, it was fireworks or something like that.
Yeah, he
like
found something under the house and.
Yeah.
Created like his own homemade explosive or whatever to defeat her. But it was kind of sweet too, because they did have a connection. And I remember at the end of the movie that it was really sweet, because it was like, and again, spoilers, but it was like, you know, he had overcome the situation and defeated her. But in that moment, they had like a moment where she was kind of like proud of him for
standing up for himself finally.
Right, right. So it was a very sweet kind of story too. But I love the kills in it. It was really great horror. It was really great comedy. And it was short. I feel like this movie was only barely over like an hour and 15 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, it was about... So it followed the Mattis rule of 90 minutes. So three things I want to say with this. The movie that Samara Weaving is in is called Ready or Not.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
So that makes sense. Two, this was actually 2017. So it actually is plausible that we did talk about this. And the third thing was that this was directed by... fucking McG,
right? I remember that as well.
McG.
Yeah, McG. Yep, and it was like a 90-minute music video.
Everyone hates his movies, and yet this came out and it was great.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked his Charlie's Angels flicks too.
Yeah, this one was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with this. This was in consideration for the list, but it ultimately fell off.
So it's my number five, The Babysitter, which is not the last time we'll be talking about horror tonight. So that's my number five, which sends us over to you, buddy. What's your number four?
All right, well, my number four is probably the first movie I fell in love with on Netflix. It was right after we started the show. I didn't really know that Netflix was doing movies at that time. Then I looked into it, and Caleb loved this, and then I found it, and I loved it. It's called The Fundamentals of Caring.
You're the kid with the cool sneakers.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with you?
I have Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
Shit, that sounds bad. Can they fix it?
No, not yet.
That fucking blows?
Yeah.
Does it hurt?
No, I mean, kind of.
Does it affect your brains?
No.
Does your penis work?
You want a menu? Can we get a menu? What would you like? You want a sandwich? You want some eggs, maybe? The waffles are really good, right, Trev?
Yeah.
Yeah, the waffles are good, or yeah, your penis works?
The waffles suck.
Yeah, that's some honorable mentions.
Ooh, there you go. It stars Paul Rudd. He's basically a former writer who's in the middle of a divorce and Basically, as a way to fulfill himself, he becomes a caretaker for this kid who basically gets to spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair, whose main goal is to pee standing up at mm-hmm. one point in his life. And mm-hmm. they wind up going on this mindless road trip to see all these dumbass sites on like the northwestern part of the United States. And it's just it's a fun, dark-ish comedy. I'm not going to call it a dark comedy because, like, the situations they're in are typically light. Like, it's your typical road trip kind of movie. But their banter back and forth is very dark. It's very melancholy. They talk mm-hmm. a lot about how Paul Rudd jokes a lot about how, like, the kid's in a wheelchair. He's really, like, impotent. He can't do anything. Selena Gomez shows up. She's great in the movie. Mm-hmm. She kind of joins their ragtag group. And
yeah, I was going to say, you didn't mention Selena Gomez. So, well, come on, brother. Let's get on that.
She was in the greatest movie of all time, Spring Breakers. So
yeah, she's in there, man.
I hate that movie so much. I blame you entirely for me saying that.
I mean, I love Harmony Korine, but it's an acquired taste. I'll give you that much. I mean, you saying you hate it is not as strange as me saying I love it. So you're going to be in the majority there, and I completely get that. So I'm not going to.
That's true. I love this movie. I there's one question.
It's a good one.
There's one questionable shot at the end of the movie where he's on a gurney and they use the gurney to stand him up to pee, and it does this kind of like dolly shot that swings out into like a wide crane shot, and you can clearly tell they're not where they are. Like, it is very obviously green screened in. So other than that one shot, I have nothing but nice things to say about that movie.
Yeah, I'm very fond of this flick too. In fact, I watched this because of your show, and you guys were recommending it so highly, and I went and checked it out, and I dug it, man. I mean, obviously, all the actors in it, including Selena Gomez, I'm a fan of. So I enjoyed it. It was a touching movie, and it was funny. It was kind of like a dark humor because of what the kid was going through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it kind of brought light to that situation, and I remember really enjoying this one too. It's on my honorable mentions. It's in my top 10. So
there you go.
Good pick, man. All right, so my number four is a movie that you turned me on to today. I just watched this today for the first time. It's been out for a few years, but I had never caught it. And, you know, I tend to stray away from, at my home at least, in the theater not so much, but at my house, I tend to stray away from movies that I feel like really require like 100% attention, if that makes sense. Because mm-hmm. I've always got something going on around here with the kids and whatever else. And this morning, I had a really chill morning before I had a doctor's appointment, and I asked you, hey, what should I watch, you know, and you sent this one to me, and I watched it, and
you stopped having a very chill morning, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But I was blown away, man. But anyway, let me name it real quick, and then we can talk about it. But it's The Beasts of No Nation. It's a war movie, and it's a war-ridden, taking place in kind of like a civil war in Africa. Yeah. And, it follows a young kid, really. His name's Agu in the movie. Just a tremendous performance by this young kid. He couldn't have been more than 12 or 13 years old.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
And he's the anchor of the movie, his 12-year-old kid. And it's really the way – and, of course, this is my impression of it, my perception. But to me, it's really about his fall from innocence, you know. And the movie starts out with him playing with his brother, playing with his friends, just having just a normal childhood that any kid would have based on their environment. And he's doing different things, and they're, you know, watching TV and having fun and running around the streets, and everything's great. And then the Civil War comes along, and his family gets ripped from him. And, you know, he stays with his dad and his brother, and all the men stay behind while the women and children leave, and they won't let him leave because I guess they consider him to be too old. And he ends up staying there. Everybody he knows ends up getting killed, and he's literally on his own. And he kind of gets adopted by these rebels that are really the bad guys, if you will.
Well, I think what they want to tell with this movie is that there's no good side to the Civil War, like, as opposed to having, because, you know, the one side of the army just fucking murdered his family and his mm-hmm. village in front of him. And then you have this side of the army that seems like a bunch of good guys. But then as you come to find out, mm-hmm. they're not much different.
Right, right. But he gets adopted by them. They're led by Idris Elba, who has obviously gone on to just be a mega superstar. And he really, I mean, he went all in on this role, man. I thought he did really, really good. I mean, he chewed the scenery. He just engulfed himself in this role. And you believed kind of the heinous, I want to say they called him commandment. Commandant. in the movie. And he really was that, you know, and you kind of got the sense that you believe what he was trying to put out there. But I was blown away by it, man. I mean, I was a little skittish at first. I mean, it had subtitles.
I remember like 10 minutes after I recommended to you, like, dude, is this all in, is that to read this whole time? I'm like, no, they'll mix in English there too.
The only kind of criticism I have, I want to say I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I mean, it was a great movie. I mean, nobody's going to refute that it was just an amazing film. I feel like the only critique that I have that it may have been higher on my list is I feel like it was a little indulgent on the violence piece.
And there really?
Was, and there was a couple of scenes that were, I don't want to say unnecessary, but I feel like we had gotten the point by then. You know, like I love the scene in the first half of the movie. I love the scene, I'm sure you remember, with the cutting the melon with the machete, and they talked about how the guy's head was basically like a melon and you got cut into it. And this 12-year-old kid's like basically chopping this guy, you know, this adult's skull. Right. And that's the kind of brutality that you saw throughout the movie. I just feel like I would have liked them to spend a little more time like they did in the last scene where Agu is talking to the teacher, and it's more of a human connection and more of the relationships as opposed to the violence that's going on around them. And, you know, like in other words, if Elba's character and Agu had more interaction and more dialogue to share together, I would have enjoyed that more than seeing another scene with a bunch of murders or rapes. I don't know. I mean, I get that it's a tough movie. I get it. But that's the only critique. I mean, I loved it. Obviously, it's on my top five. So,
no, that's interesting because, like, my read of the movie is that after he kills that guy, you know, with the machete,
mm-hmm.
they don't, like, they'll show the act of violence. Like, there's a scene where he's hopped up on Brown where all the mm-hmm. colors are distorted. I love that scene.
I did, too. That was a great...
The use of colors in this movie is amazing.
Yeah, the filmmaker's fuck. I don't know his name. I don't have it in front of me, but it's awesome.
Joe Fukunaga. He's awesome. Doing Bond 25.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. But that scene, he comes into the village, and he, like, sprays his AK-47. And you just see him spray the AK-47. And it just continues to follow him as he continues to go through the village. That's why, like, when you're talking about the violence, I'm like, the act of violence, yes, that mm-hmm. is what the movie is just kind of showing. Because now that his innocence is gone, basically,
mm-hmm.
they don't really need to focus on, like, the gore and the aftermath of his violence. All they're doing is just like, hey, he's just mowing people down willy-nilly. You know, it doesn't matter to him anymore. He's gone.
Right. I could see that. No, I could see that. And that's kind of what I meant was the act of violence. But I guess there was a lack of human connection between the characters in lieu of the act of violence. That's kind of what I meant.
We could talk about this forever. I could talk about this movie for days.
Did this make your five?
Maybe.
You know, going into it this morning, I didn't think, okay, I'm going to watch this. It's going to be in my top five. And here it is. So it was a great recommendation. It's a great movie. It's hard to watch. It's brutal. It's brutal to get through. And it's a tough thing if you connect with this young boy in the movie who is literally going from the most innocent image that you could think of for a young kid to just horror within, you know, 2 hours. So it's tough to watch, but it's a great movie. So anybody out there that's got Netflix that can deal with kind of like war movies with a lot of violence, I would say take it on because it's a great flick. That is my number four, which leads us to your number three, man. What do you got?
All right, well, here's the documentary.
Okay.
I never thought I would say this about a documentary, being in a top five list of anything. Normally, documentaries aren't my thing. I get enough of real life through the news and such, but... When I watched Icarus for the first time after mm-hmm. it won the Academy Award for Best Documentary, I went in being like, okay, we're doing it's a documentary about a guy who does this the top amateur cycling event,
mm-hmm.
and he just does it, like he trains hard for it, he does it, and then he wants to do a test of how much better would I do if I went on a steroid regimen. Like you would see normal people do. Mm-hmm. So he enlists this guy from, I want to say the USDA, which is the US Drug Administration. And then he's like, ethically, I just can't do this anymore. So I'm going to refer you to this guy in Russia. And the guy in Russia puts him on a steroid regimen. And he competes in the event. And he does worse. because of a myriad of issues. But that's not what the documentary is about. The documentary switches gears about like 35 minutes through, and it becomes, they start talking about this Russian guy who now is breaking all of these secrets as to Russia and what their involvement in the Olympics has been, and basically like how they've been using steroids and concealing steroid use in order to make their athletes better. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you remember, I want to say it was the 2018 Winter Olympics. That's why Russia wasn't there. And it was, like, I think the People's Federation of Russia.
Yeah, I remember that.
Russian athletes had to compete under a different banner because Russia was barred from even being at the Olympics that year.
Hmm.
Eventually, you come to find out this man's life is being threatened. Like, it is just an insane story that, you know, broke the whole Russia steroid scandal in the first place.
So this is one that I haven't seen. I knew that this won the Academy Award, and I knew that it got a lot of shout-outs online. We'll talk about that later from some fans that had some feedback. And I wanted to watch this before our recording, but I haven't seen it. So this is not the documentary that made my list, but I know this is highly regarded. So, I mean, is this one of those documentaries that's like a think piece, or is it like a lot of kind of tense action in it?
I wouldn't say action. It is tense. It's not a think piece. Like, this is very clearly, hey, does steroids make you better kind of documentary, which would have been interesting in its own right. Like, it wouldn't have been an Academy Award winner, but it would have been an interesting documentary.
Right.
But then you tack on this story of this guy who's now on the run from the Russian government because he's just given away all of, like, their big athletic secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, I don't know if this guy, like, there's a sequence in the movie where he's not returning the director's calls, and you have no idea what's going on, and you don't know why he's not returning his calls. It is harrowing.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's on my to-do. It's actually in my queue on Netflix, so it's definitely one that I want to check out. I feel like my wife would enjoy it too, and I try to hang tight to watch some with her.
He'll love it.
Put him up there, right? Yeah, no, you might be onto something there. All right, well, here's one I won't be showing him for quite a few years, is my number three. And that is my namesake, Gerald's Game.
It's that easy.
Oh, baby, you're really listening now. Except your hand won't fit through the cuff. And the bedpost is reinforced. Nice thought, though.
Shut up. Don't listen to him. He's the reason we're here to begin with, and look how he ended up.
I'm just telling her how things really are.
No, you're doing what you always did. Minimizing. Condescending. Men aren't so much blessed with penises as cursed by them. And we might die here today because of Gerald's 5 inches. Our life has to add up to more than that.
I can't get out.
What about the stories on the news where mothers lift their cars to save their children?
She's no mother.
What's that supposed to mean?
No maternal instinct.
Your career always came first.
Oh, that's what you said. Maybe even started to believe it. I'm not so sure you can hide things from me now.
Okay, you're wasting precious time here.
I can't get out.
You have to.
I am chained to the goddamn bed.
Don't recite facts to me. Wake up.
Says the voice in your head.
This is you. All over. Problem, panic, denial, hoping if you look away, it'll magically vanish. If you don't wake up, you're gonna die in those handcuffs. And we both know you've been sleepwalking since you were 12 years old.
Not now.
If not now, when?
Not now, what?
He put you in those handcuffs way before Gerald did.
Who's he?
Is my number three, the Stephen King adaptation. I know you weren't a huge fan of this because I heard you and Caleb discuss this when it came out. I'm kind of giving this away, I guess, to my idiocy, but I haven't read a lot of books. But this is one book that I read in full, and I read it when I was early on in my college career. And they did an amazing job. This was directed by Mike Flanagan, who also did the Haunting of Hill House series that I loved. He's got a great horror approach where it's very minimal, but it's still scary and it's still tense. And I thought this was a great adaptation from the book. Again, a lot of people won't be able to relate to what I'm saying because when they go see a movie that's based on a book, they have read it or they have a knowledge of it or whatever. In this case, I do. And usually I see the movie before I read the book, or I never read the book, if that makes sense.
Right.
But Gerald's Game I read several years ago. And then I got to see it on the big screen.
Grandma probably was like, oh, this has Gerald's name on it. I best give it to him.
Yeah. I actually took an American horror fiction class in college, and we got to pick a book to read that semester and then do like a report on it at the end of the semester. And I chose Gerald's Game really because of the name. And my professor told me about it. He was like, you know, there's a Stephen King novel that uses your name. You should check it out. And they had it in the library there at UNC Charlotte. And that's what I went with. So that was why it was for a school assignment. But I was enthralled by it as a novel. And then that's what I'm saying. And seeing it on the screen was really, really cool for me because – and when I say the screen, of course, I mean at home because it was on Netflix. But it was really, really cool for me because it just brought back like reading those pages 20 years ago. And, you know, it's crazy. And I know that it's probably like people are like, what? Like I read books and I see movies based on books, but I don't see movies based on books. So the fact that I did, I've only read probably like 3 books in my whole life. You know what I mean? From cover to cover. So to see a movie about a book that I actually read at a time in my life when I could remember it, it was really cool. But Carla Gugino kind of carrying the load here, because obviously this is a movie where she's the central figure and she's really the only person, for the most part, in the movie for, I don't know, 70 to 80% of the film.
Yeah.
Already talked about Mike Flanagan's kind of eye for horror. I thought Haunting of Hill House was an amazing series. Gerald's Game. I mean, it's my name, bro. So what am I going to do? But I love Stephen King. They're actually seeing Beasts of No Nation knocked out another Stephen King. That's my number 6. So just so you know.
1922?
Yeah. Yeah. Some honorable mentions. But I also love that one a whole lot.
I like Gerald's Game. I'm not sure if I love it. It's been a while since I've seen it. And I'll probably revisit it come around like this Halloween.
Yeah.
1922, I did not care for at all. So...
you know, Thomas Jane did it for me in that movie, man. I thought his performance was just awesome. I'm doing a little plug for our October month coming up for our top fives, and you'll probably be into this. Me and our buddy Justin out in Cali are going to be doing our top 5 Stephen King adaptations. So I don't know. Maybe this might not be the last time I talk about Gerald's Game in the next couple of months, but that's my number 3, man. And we're up to our runner-ups, guys. So you ready, Dan? You're number 2, man. You surprised me with Meyerowitz stories.
Oh,
but otherwise,
depends on how much you people pay attention to me. The last two,
I was on that show with you, and Meyerowitz surprises me. But go ahead.
The top 3 should not surprise anybody who's ever listened to me speak.
Okay.
But then again, I don't know how much people actually pay attention to me when I talk. So my number 2 is my most recent entry on the list, and is the most surprising entry on the list. It covers a subject that I never thought I would ever be into, and that is old people trying to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
As everyone knows, I do not like children. No offense to anyone who has children, but children are not for me, and I will never have children. But the movie I'm talking about is Private Life.
Well, he's out of his fucking mind. There's no way in hell I'm doing that.
We should at least just think about it. I'm not saying that we would do it, right? We could just explore the idea, see how we feel, make a list of all the pros and cons.
We talked about this. We swore we would never do it.
No, you swore that you would never do it. I kept my mouth shut because I didn't want to pressure you into something that you were going to have to live with for the rest of your life.
Wait, so all this time that I'm assuming that we feel the same way about this, you've been having secret fantasies about egg donation?
It's not a secret fantasy.
It is to me. I didn't know about it. I thought that we had decided together as a couple that we would definitely draw the line at science fiction.
It's not science fiction, Rach. It's pretty primitive, actually. They do it with farm animals all the time.
Well, I'm not a goat, okay?
Bad example. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. You're like so gung-ho right now. It's like, it's freaking me out.
I am not gung-ho. I'm just pragmatic. Look, if we do another IVF with your eggs, we've got, what, a 4% chance of getting pregnant? With a donor egg, we'd be going from 4 to like 65%. So, I mean, the gambler in me just wants to put my money on the better odds.
Oh, my God. You're Guy Woodhouse.
What?
The husband in Rosemary's Baby, John Cassavetes. That's you.
Yeah, right. That's me. Standing by while you're raped by a satanic demon.
This stars Paul Giamatti and Catherine Hahn. Like I said, they're a 40-something, maybe even 50-something couple trying to still have children, whether that's through in vitro, whether that's through hormone treatment, whether that's through adoption. They're just trying to have a kid, and that's their entire goal. Mm-hmm. And it's really sweet. It's really heartbreaking at times. Like, the final scene is just like this, hey, just tugging at those heartstrings of yours, and you're just like, oh, you're just like so wrapped in it. And I was just so surprised. Like, you know, when I heard that this movie was getting like critically praised by people, I just went, really? A movie about the 40-somethings trying to have children? Okay, I'll watch this. And fuck, this movie was so good, man. Like, Giamatti and Catherine Hahn are putting on a fucking clinic. And it's, you have Molly Shannon too. The sister-in-law who is going through her own process of not losing her kids, but like her kids growing up and no longer really needing her. So like she's going through that a bit. That's not really explored so much. It's more about Giamatti and Hahn, what they're going through. But
this one came up quite a bit when I was doing some research, but it's another one I haven't seen. It's in my queue. I've heard, on top of what you're saying right now, I've heard great things about it. I love Paul Giamatti, so I'm looking forward to seeing this one. I feel like, is this one a little bit of a tearjerker? I know you don't cry in movies, but would this be considered?
Can be. It definitely could be. I think Ashley cried during this, but I can't remember. I don't want to sully her good name of crying during movies, because I know she does. She definitely cries, and I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, nothing. Are you crying?
Something in my eye.
But the ending of this movie could definitely get you.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to be checking it out in the near future, but I've heard great things about it. So Private Life is your runner-up. All right, man. So I think you've seen my number two and my number one. I would be surprised if you hadn't seen either of them.
I've seen your 5 through 3 so far. So
okay, all right. I'm pretty sure I'm only saying that because I don't remember you and Caleb talking about this next one, but I just saw this recently. I want to say I saw it about a month ago, and it, you know, Netflix does this weird shit with suggesting stuff to you, and I don't really know where they get it from.
All you had to do was just say, Netflix does this weird shit, and I would have agreed with you.
I don't know where they get it from, but I'm so happy they suggested this to me. I had never heard of it, and it came up, and you know how they'll, I don't know if you have the setting like this, but on my smart TV, it'll like start playing the trailer if you just sit on it for a couple seconds. Does yours do that?
Yeah. It'll play a clip or a trailer. Like, if it's a Netflix original, it'll play the trailer.
So it, you know, I had it, my remote was, I didn't do anything, and it just started playing the trailer. So I watched it, and I'm like, wow, this is right up my alley. So I'll go ahead and name it real quick. My number two is a film called I Am Mother.
Aren't you going to help her?
I tried.
We can't leave her like that.
She has all she requires.
What was she saying? Mother. Did you know?
Daughter, what happened?
Nothing.
You're bleeding.
Did you know there were people out there?
I'm as surprised as you. This facility was designed by humans as a failsafe, programmed to activate in case of their extinction, to give humanity a second chance. One that began with you, daughter.
And all your data, the toxicity levels?
I had hoped to tell you myself.
What happened, Mother?
I told you it was dangerous outside. And it is. If you'd feared the same danger in our home, how could I have raised you? I hope you see that I'm governed by different parameters than her assailants. That I'm a good mother. Have I ever done you harm? It was the only way, daughter.
Have you seen it?
Okay. We did talk about this. Okay. Or at least I did. It just goes to show, no one pays attention.
No,
when I talk.
I'm going to go back and listen. I probably didn't listen because I hadn't seen it at that point. But, well, here's the thing, man. You know this. Ashley knows this. Caleb knows this. But anybody else listening, I am a Black Mirror fanatic. It's my favorite currently running program. I love it. And you know that very, very well.
Yes. You've been on three Black Mirror episodes this year so far. Think about that. We've done three Black Mirror episodes. You have been on all three.
Right, and I'm very honored to do so because I love talking about that show. But, you know, to have a sci-fi element and a horror element, you're catering to Gerald. You know what I mean? And that's what this movie did. So this movie, to me, the reason I brought that up is because it's like a Black Mirror spinoff. I mean, that's kind of what I thought of when I was watching it. I feel like this could have very easily been a Black Mirror episode, mm-hmm. just a little bit shorter, of course. But, you know, Hilary Swank's in there. She's a powerhouse actress. I've always really, really liked her. Million Dollar Baby. She's amazing. I mean, I just love her as an actress, and I think she does a really good job in this movie. It's kind of the mysterious. You don't know if she's a protect. You don't know, and that's what the filmmakers do a really good job. You know, and you don't know what her end game is. And she does a good job of kind of wanting to pull for her, but also should you be pulling for her? But the movie is awesome because it's a futuristic story about a young baby that is born and raised by a robot that's referred to as Mother in the film, which is voice cast perfectly by Rose Byrne. Mm-hmm. And she's a very nurturing mother and very frightening at the same time. Like, you know, she could just fucking end you if she wanted to. Very powerful kind of machine. But you do get that sense of emotion and connection that she has to her quote unquote daughter in the film. And she literally raises her from an infant, does all the things that a normal human mother would do throughout the course of infancy, and teaches her, like homeschools her on all the different elements of life that she would need to learn about. And they're in this compound, so she can't leave. It's just the two of them there, or that, mm-hmm. you know, you suspect that's the case. And of course, as life would have it, the kid grows up, becomes a teenager. And as she gets older, she wants to explore and she wants to see what's out there. And Mother does not want her to leave. And it becomes a kind of a cat and mouse thing. Hilary Swank comes into the picture as an outsider that kind of stumbles upon their compound. And it's a very obviously sci-fi movie, futuristic movie, but it does have elements of horror in it because you're really kind of scared of Mother. But at the same time, you're kind of pulling for Mother. So it's weird. But it kind of floored me, man. I clicked on it because Netflix suggested it. And I was like, man, I loved it. I want to say I gave it 4.5 stars, which...
Wow.
Yeah, with the exception of the new Tarantino, that's the highest score I've given this year. So I really liked it, man. What did you... I'm interested, since I didn't hear your episode, I'm interested to hear what you thought about this one.
So we didn't like cover it fully, but I liked it. I did not love it. The last 15 minutes, like I know what they were going for, but for whatever reason, I just was not connecting with the last 15 minutes. But man, was I super into the first 75.
Yeah,
just
I
like
agree.
You said, you have no idea what anyone's actual intentions are, and it's everyone is a shade of gray, and it is well written up until that ending, and where it, like, I don't want to say falls apart, but it definitely drops it down. Like I wound up giving like a 3.5. Like mm-hmm. It's still a good movie to me.
Right. No, I, you know, what they were doing with the message, at least this is my perception, is that, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. And, you know, the young girl leaves, which, by the way, she was awesome. I want to say this was might have been her first, like, feature role or one of her first.
Yeah, something like that.
But, you know, she leaves with Hilary Swank, and then she realizes, wait a second, you know, I basically had it made where I was based on what this world can offer me out here. And that's kind of the message, you know, because we all think that, like, I want to quit my job because the job down the street is going to be so much better. And then when you get down there, you realize, well, I kind of had it better over at the other place. And that's kind of the message that is being delivered in the end in a simplistic way. But I'm actually agreeing with you. I would have given it 5 stars had it not been for the last like 10, 15 minutes. I felt like it kind of fell off at the end there trying to push the message.
There was also one sequence where Mother's running and like, Up until that point, you're like, oh, this is very, like, it seems like they got, like, a practical robot. Mm-hmm. And then Mother starts running. You're like, nope.
Yeah, I remember that, too. I remember that, too. But it was cool, man, because, you know, I'm sure Rose Byrne's voice casting had a lot to do with it. But it was, and I think I mentioned this in my review online, too, is, like, she was very, like, frightening and very nurturing at the same time. Mm. And that's very hard to pull off, man. And I thought they did a really, really good job at it. And I was invested. I mean, I was into that movie the whole time. I was staring at my TV and I loved it, man. So I Am Mother is my number two, brother. And we're up to our number ones. Do you see the plot twist in my list? Do you know what I have not mentioned yet? I have not mentioned a documentary. So we'll get to that in a moment. What's your number one, Dan?
Well, that's already been mentioned, Gerald. It's the movie. It's the movie that I could talk about for days. Of course, it is. It is Beasts of No Nation.
Native Defense Forces.
How does your commandant look?
All right, sir.
How does your commandant look?
All right, sir.
What is it that has brought this big family of strangers together? Was it fear?
No, sir.
Was it war?
Yes, sir.
We were defending ourselves. We have to get revenge. Huh? We have been defending ourselves against the killings and rapings of our own people from the PLF and now from the NRC junta. But it has awakened a sleeping beast. It has awakened a giant. It has put the weapons of this war back in the hands of you, the young, and therefore the powerful. Young men, wealth, we will not wait to inherit any wealth. We will not wait for them to come and give it to us.
No, no sir.
We are going to take it.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take it from them.
Yes, sir.
Seize it.
Yes, sir.
All of you that have never been listened to before and have seen your family killed, you now have something that stands for you. You now have something that stands for you. That is your defense.
Yes, sir.
That is your family's blood.
Yes, sir.
Victory.
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 We are going to seize it.
Victory.
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 We are my family.
You know, Netflix got it in one. Should have just stopped making movies after this. Should have been like, here we go. Here's our prestige piece. Suck it, everybody. We're the greatest movie studio on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's incredible, man. There's this shot, like, about half an hour into the movie where Agu is walking through. This is right after his family's been killed. He's walking through the forest, and there's this one singular white tree splitting the frame, and he walks past this white tree, and that's the signaling of the beginning of the loss of his innocence. And I was just like, oh, the use of colors, like I said, the scene where they're tripping out on brown, everything is like, oh, this oversaturated, like, pink color.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful. And, you know, everything gets answered. There's a scene where Agu asks Stryker, why don't you speak? Like, what's wrong with you? Is there something wrong with you? And then about, like, I want to say about an hour and 15 minutes into the movie, we find out why Stryker doesn't talk, because Agu is given something very similar to what Stryker's been wearing for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And then what follows that up, you understand. Stryker's interesting because, like, he never talks, but you know exactly what he's doing, like, exactly what he's going through. Mm-hmm. And, like, right after that, you totally understand that character entirely. Man, there's just so, like you said, Idris Elba is chewing up scenery, but he's doing it in the best way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dude, how does your commandant look? All right, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huh? Dude, he, like, the way he is, the way he portrays himself, the way he carries himself in that movie, you can see why these kids were basically brainwashed by him.
Right. No, it's definitely a level of brainwashing going on in the movie. And I failed to mention that when I talked about it before, but I agree with you, man. I mean, you recommended it to me today. I saw it 12 hours ago. And I loved it. And it's fresh in my mind. It's brutal. It's hard to watch. And I talked about that before. I would just, you know, give people that kind of warning, but I don't think they should skip it. I think everyone that can deal with the brutality of, like, a war movie should watch it.
I think what hurt this movie in terms of awards is that it was Netflix's first movie that they distributed.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone was just like, what do we do here? Like, do we let them do things? Like, Idris Elba wound up winning, like, a couple Golden Globes, or was at least nominated for a Golden Globe.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, no one knew what to really do with this at the Oscars. They were just like, eh.
Yeah, what do you think it would do if it came out today? Multiple nominations, probably.
Definitely multiple nominations. Maybe best adapted screenplay.
Especially off of, like, the success of Roma, I would think, too.
Best supporting actor nod for Idris Elba. Maybe and cinematography, I think.
And
I
that's
think
another... Oh, cinematography was fucking beautiful. And the editing was great, too.
Mm-hmm.
Editing was awesome in this movie. I didn't... Did you... and it's okay if you did. I'm an idiot when it comes to these things, but I didn't really like Idris Elba's ending either. I don't know. I felt like
I like that.
Did you?
There's no reason. Like, yeah, you can kill him. Like, you can absolutely kill him. But I think it's more harmful for that character that everyone just, like, not everyone. Like, there are some people that stuck around still. But, like, I think it's more harmful for that character because now he's alone.
Everybody left him.
He's been surrounded by this group of kids that just basically loves him. They're like, oh, my God, this guy is the greatest. And they start to realize as things start to get tough, holy shit, this guy sucks
right,
a lot.
Right.
And so, like, I think them all leaving him is more impactful than him just dying.
I see that.
If they killed him, well, then, you know, he was still killed by somebody that he knows. And, you know, that's still a form of love. Mm-hmm. And him being left alone now, that's more, to me, that's a bigger death than being shot.
I could see that. And I think that it's cool, too, that you're so conflicted as the viewer, too, or at least I was. You know, I was conflicted with this character, man, especially at the end. Like, I remember thinking as I was watching it earlier today, and it's fresh in my mind, I can remember thinking, I kind of want Agu to stay with him, but everybody else mm-hmm. to leave. I kind of wanted them to be together. And I remember thinking that for a split second, even how despicable that he had been to Agu throughout the film.
Right.
It was a very conflicted kind of moment for me as a viewer. And I feel like Elba really pulled that off because he's kind of putting you in the same situation that these kids that are following him have been in. Is like you kind of sympathize with him and you kind of want to be there with him, even though you know that you really shouldn't be. You know what I mean?
Well, it's that character's kind of written Tarantino-esque. Like if you think about Leo in Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
He's like in Hans Landa in Inglourious Bastards. Sure. Mm-hmm. Like those guys are super magnetic characters. They're super charming. That's exactly what Idris Elba is in this movie too. He's extremely charming. You know how despicable he is, but you're also kind of rooting for him just because of like his natural charisma.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, man. So let me give you my number one real quick, Danny boy. And I don't know. I'm assuming you've seen this, but let's see what you think here. So my number one is a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, messaged you a few days ago and I said, hey, man, I want to include documentaries. And if you had said no, I would have lived with it. And 1922 probably would have been on my list. But since you were cool with it, it is on my list. And not only is it on my list, it's my number one. It's Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond.
You know, and no one really knew what was real and not real half the time. I didn't know what was real and not real. You just went with Andy and Tony and wherever their whim took you. And the emotions oftentimes were very real.
You want me not to tell you what I really feel?
Yes.
Oh, so you want, okay. Yes. All right, that's what I need to know then. All right, then I won't tell you my concern.
You know, I just want to be supported. I mean, if I want to choose to do something, you should support me. I mean, I don't understand why you're always negative and you don't.
Jerry Becker, who was playing my father at one point, went crazy suddenly in the makeup trailer, started screaming at Andy as his father.
I'm angry because I love you. I'm not angry because I want to try to not give you support. Too late! Too late!
All right, fine.
I'm terrible. Sorry. I want you to be here. I want you to be here.
It's just bizarre. It's so bizarre. It's so.
And this is what started happening all over the place. This kind of crazy melodrama happening everywhere.
Oh no, I haven't seen this.
Okay.
This is probably like one of the few movies I haven't seen on Netflix.
Okay. This is a document. Let me just kind of give a really brief summary and then I'll kind of pine over why I love it so much. So the brief summary, kind of like synopsis, is that this is a documentary discussing Jim Carrey's dive into the character of Andy Kaufman that he portrayed in Man on the Moon, which was a film, I don't have the year in front of me, but it came out in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And he portrayed Andy Kaufman in that film, was a biopic. And this is a documentary about his preparation for that role, basically, and his connection to Andy throughout the course of making that movie. Now, the reason I love it, I mean, truth be told, I'm a Jim Carrey fan. I've just always have been since Ace Ventura, since Living Color. He's a comedic genius. His physical comedy is up there with Robin Williams. I mean, it's like almost unrivaled. He's just going to go down as a legend in that category. And so many iconic characters that he's created over the years. But what he did in Man on the Moon is he was another iconic character. So you had an icon playing an icon. And to see the method acting and how he committed himself to not portraying Andy Kaufman in a movie, but being Andy Kaufman for months. I mean, you need to see the documentary to know what I'm talking about. But there were 3 months where Jim Carrey was not available. He was literally Andy Kaufman on and off the set. He would do only things that he had researched and known Andy to do. He was unavailable to his friends and family. I mean, he was literally not, he was checked out. He was the character that he was portraying. And that type of commitment, man, is just so special to me. And I've seen that in other roles that he's done too, such as The Truman Show and even The Cable Guy, where he's kind of this sick, maniacal kind of stalker, you know?
Dude, Cable Guy is so underrated.
It really is, man. And he just really commits himself to the characters that he's portraying. But in this case, he was trying to be true to a real guy that a lot of comedians, himself included, look at as a pioneer. I mean, you know, Andy Kaufman was unbelievable, man. I mean, he was doing things that you watch now and you look back on, whether it's little clips on SNL or The Tonight Show or whatever from the 60s and 70s, and you look back and you go, what the fuck was this guy doing? Like, he was out of his goddamn mind, you know? But he was such a genius, man, because he just was recreating and just inventing a genre before our eyes, or not my eyes because I was too young, but before people like Jim Carrey's eyes, you know, and just to see this documentary play out and the method that he brought, the method acting that he brought to it. You know, I know you're a big wrestling fan, and there was a feud that Andy Kaufman had with, help me out, what was the
Jerry
wrestler?
Jerry the King Lawler.
And Jerry Lawler comes to the set of this movie because he had a cameo in the film. And, you know, he's a Jim Carrey fan because he knows Jim Carrey from the stuff that he's done. So he wants to go to Jim Carrey's trailer to get his autograph, meet him, whatever. You know, I'm so glad we get to work together. Jim Carrey's not there, bro. I mean, this is Andy Kaufman. And Andy and Lawler had this feud in the 80s, and or maybe in the 70s. I apologize. I'm not sure the actual time frame. But Jim Carrey lives that. That feud lives on when he meets Lawler. And he starts, you know, digging into Lawler as Andy Kaufman would have or did, you know, 20 years prior. And it's just amazing. And they end up getting in an actual fight and is filmed in the documentary and the trailer because Lawler's like, what the fuck's your problem, man? Like, you know, this is just a movie. And Jim Carrey will not break character. And it's just crazy to me, man. I mean, you know, it's Jim Carrey, so people might kind of turn their nose up at it or whatever. But the fact that he didn't get nominated for this, man, I mean, especially after seeing this documentary, it's just crazy to me. I know you haven't seen it, so I'm sorry to be going on and on about it. I don't want to spoil it for you, but I definitely recommend you check it out, especially if you have any kind of affinity for Jim Carrey. So my number one, man, Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond. Is that in your queue? What do you think?
No, and I'm not sure it ever will be. I've never even seen Man on the Moon, so it's like I really don't have like a connection to that. You know, but then again, I'd really have a connection to a guy taking steroids and then stumbling upon a whole Russian scandal. So,
or the old people having babies. You definitely don't have a connection to that.
Or the old people having babies. No, that's you, Gerald.
So, look, man, we're going to go over to social media in a second. Before we do that, go ahead and wrap up your top five for the folks, man. What was your top five?
Sure. My number five was The Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected. Four was The Fundamentals of Caring. Three was Icarus. Two was Private Life, and number one, Beasts of No Nation.
Love it. My top five was The Babysitter, Beasts of No Nation, Gerald's Game, obviously I had to, I Am Mother, and Jim and Andy, the documentary called The Great Beyond was my number one. All right, so before we head over to social media, man, do you want to give a few honorable mentions? As you joked at me so lovingly before I rounded out my top 10, what did you do over there?
Oh, of course, Gerald. As you know, I also round out my top 10 whenever doing these kind of lists. So the other documentary I went with at my number six was 13th. This is the Ava DuVernay documentary about how the 13th Amendment, which is basically abolishing the amendment abolishing slavery, how that has been manipulated in since it's been ratified into making prisoners more slave-like, and being that black people are like the number one demographic in terms of prison population in the United States, how prison has basically become a new form of slavery. Mm-hmm. So very interesting. Really changed a lot of my opinions on the prison system with that. So seven, I had Outlaw King, which it's the Braveheart sequel we never knew we wanted, but
right.
My God, did they just nail this period setting. Chris Pine's great. Florence Pugh's great. And even in a limited role, dude, 2018, 2019 has been Florence Pugh's like lifetime.
Dude, Florence Pugh, I'm going to talk about this one in just a second. It's on my honorable mentions as well. But Florence Pugh is a goddess among humanity, bro. She is literally everything I see her in. I'm like, wow, you are fucking awesome.
Eight was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Okay.
The Coen Brothers anthology movie.
Sure.
Nine was Mudbound. Now, Mudbound could have been like number one on this list if the first half of the movie didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of setup for the first half, but like once the second half kicks in, oh my God, this thing is amazing. Like it's the reason I will see Garrett Hedlund in anything now, because Garrett, like, and I never thought I'd say that after watching Tron Legacy. Like, Tron Legacy is fine. Like, Tron Legacy is whatever. I know most people hate it because like the Jeff Bridges de-aging thing, which imagine if they went back now doing that, but man, Garrett Hedlund just fucking knocked out of the park in that movie. I loved him. And then 10 is one I'm surprised wasn't on your list. What Happened to Monday?
It's coming up.
The
it's
new Mira Pace movie that she's plays seven of herself, and
it's
all of them
up.
Have a distinct personality. They're all distinct characters. It, you know, she got a lot of goodwill with that movie from me. That goodwill is slowly drying up after what Close was earlier this year. That movie was rough, but
yeah, I've heard she went on a little bit of a downslide, but I'm going to actually talk about that one here in a second. All right, so to round out my top 10, I've already told you number six would be in 1922. I'm a horror fanatic and a Stephen King fanatic, so it was kind of a no-brainer. I liked what they really did with that, kind of the simplicity of that movie. Mm-hmm. My number seven would have been a romantic comedy that I also just saw recently called To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Okay, good. I accept this one. This one is acceptable.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, man. I thought it was going to be a little too cheesy for me, but I thought the kind of the satirical humor was really good, and the lead actress—I don't have her name—but I thought she
Lana Condor.
Yeah, yeah.
She should just be called Lana Condor, and every like her role, her character name in every single movie should just be Lana Condor, because no character name beats that.
That's true, actually. But I thought it was cute, man, and it was a really, you know, kind of simple, but it was unique the way they kind of went about telling the love story, but it was just a high school rom-com. And
we're getting
really
a sequel
good.
At some point. I don't know exactly when,
okay,
but we're getting
cool.
a sequel.
You already mentioned it, but my number eight was Outlaw King. And really, I'm not trying to be funny, but Florence Pugh and Chris Pine's penis are really the reasons
Chris
why.
Chris Pine's penis is like more penises. Let's just show more penises in theater. Come on, guys.
And the action sequences, I mean, were to die for. They were really, really well done, I thought, as well.
That last action sequence is so good.
I agree. What Happened to Monday would have been my number nine. So there you go. And then I kind of had a tie for my number 10. You already mentioned Fundamentals of Caring, so I'll talk about the other one. My number 10 would have been another documentary that was just fascinating to me. It was a very recent event that occurred, but they did a fire festival documentary called The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
They just call it Fire.
Fire, okay.
But like the tagline is The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
Oh, okay, I got you. Just Fire. Okay. Yeah, I saw that. I watched that one, and Hulu did a similar one that I
fire
also
fraud.
Watched. I watched both of them. They're both just, as a duo, they were just so fascinating. It's just crazy to me, the impact of social media. I assume you saw this.
Yeah, I saw both of them. I like Fire. I think they're both interesting. I think they both have their merits. They both have issues with them that, and I'll talk about this, like, we can talk about this offline, but there's like certain issues with each of them that are, make them eh. But I prefer the Fire one, not just because like I'm a Netflix guy, you know, I don't care about that, but the Fire Fraud one does this thing where it like cuts to like cartoon shit.
Well, it's randomly. Also like interviewing him the whole time.
That's the interesting part about that. Like it rehashes a lot of information from the Fire one. I watched the Netflix one first, obviously, but
like, me too.
That's interesting. Like them interviewing him is interesting. But like everything else is like, oh, I've already heard this. Like, I don't need this. And maybe if, you know, if I watch them in reverse order, I'd feel differently. But who knows?
All right, Danny boy. So we're going to head over to social media and we're going to open up the suggestion box. OK, so you ready for that? Give a little feedback here. See what the fans had to say. Some that we quite a few that we haven't mentioned, actually. So we'll start over on Facebook. OK. So our good buddy Pete from Podstalgic, which is a movie that I loved that I feel like you were kind of lukewarm on, but he says, Always Be My Maybe. What do you think of that one?
I am not lukewarm on that. I hate that movie. That script.
Wow.
That script
Come on, bro. This was a fucking good movie, dude.
It's
this
a good movie for 10 minutes.
When Keanu's in it?
Specifically when Keanu Reeves shows up, and then like the rest of it's dog shit, man.
Peter, I'm so sorry. I like that one too, Pete. And like, Keanu.
Like I'm happy that Asian people got their romantic comedy. I'm glad. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And Keanu was probably the best part of that movie.
But awesome. This movie's a piece of shit.
Let's see. We talked about To All the Boys I've Loved Before, and Amanda shouted that one out, and she actually kind of talked me into watching it, and it ended up making my top 10. So I thought it was a great rom-com. I agree. Not only that, but Tony mentioned What Happened to Monday, which I had literally forgotten about. And you said that she's kind of fallen off there. Noomi Rapace.
Yeah. So, like, she did that. She did Bright, which people don't like. I like. It's like, it's okay. It's your blockbuster movie. Like, people will shit on Netflix being like, oh, man, Netflix made a blockbuster flop. It's like, no, like, if you put this out in theaters, this would have done exactly the same as, like, maybe Godzilla.
It was good. Willem Dafoe, right? He was in that, right?
Willem Dafoe. Yeah, I think he had like a bit role in it.
He was kind of their like father.
But yeah, then she did like Close, and that movie sucks. Mm-hmm. So
let's see, Paul. We love Paul over in Australia on the countdown. He said The Outlaw King. Mm-hmm. What Happened to Monday? And then he was not sure if that counted, but I think you kind of set him straight there.
Oh, What Happened to Monday for them, like, left Netflix? And this is what I was talking about earlier with Annihilation. Like, please use correct nomenclature in Netflix. Like, people think one thing, and then it turns out it's a different thing. Like, it's super disingenuous. And honest to God, their shittiest tactic.
And he said also The Night Comes for Us, which I haven't seen. Have you seen that one?
That one features several people from The Raid. I like that movie. I don't love that movie. It feels too anime to me, but that's because I watch a shit ton of anime. So, like, for you, a normal person that does not watch anime and therefore is a sane human being, you might appreciate it more.
Gotcha. Tony from Take Two, love him. He's commenting pretty much every week. Thank you so much, Tony. Here's his top five. I'm assuming from 1 to 5. He's got Beasts of No Nation, Buster Scruggs, Private Life, High Flying Bird, which I've never heard of, and The Perfection. What's High Flying Bird?
High Flying Bird is a Steven Soderbergh movie that was shot entirely on iPhone, like similar to Unsane, but this one is about the NBA's in the lockout. The first overall draft pick for the NBA is without a contract, therefore he has no money. So his agent is trying to do things to restart the league. It stars Andre Holland from Moonlight. He's great in it. I don't like how it's shot because, one, it's shot on an iPhone. Like, the colors are all distorted at times. There's this, like, specifically one scene where they're in a sauna and they're shooting at, like, that crooked, like, horror angle you would see sometimes, like that, like, 15-degree angle or something, and it just does not look good. Like, it's shot really awkwardly, and I don't like it, but I think the acting and the script is very smart. So
Gotcha.
I would recommend it for that, but, like, if you're somebody who puts a lot of stock into how a movie looks, you'll struggle to get through this.
Gotcha. And then we'll just head over to Twitter for a few final ones. Let's see. Jameson Rabbit over there on Twitter said, "Always be my maybe." I know you love that. Ballad of Buster Scruggs. "I don't feel at home in this world anymore."
Yes.
What's that?
Okay, so that's a dark comedy movie starring Elijah Wood, and I can't remember her name right now.
Okay, but, all right.
Basically, this girl's tired of shit happening to her in the world, so she just flips out. I didn't care for it, but I can see why people did. Like, it just wasn't my kind of comedy style. That's really all it came down to.
And then he's got one that I've heard thrown around that's actually been in my queue for over a year. Okja, am I saying that right? OKJA?
Yes. That one is from the director who did Snowpiercer. I can't remember what his name is. But basically, it's his anti-meat industry movie.
Yeah, I remember that was kind of the social message that was attached to that film. And it's been in my queue forever. I've heard great things about it. I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, you might get, like, the last 20 minutes is, like, really hard to get through. Because, like, he's really trying to drive this point home of, like, vegetarianism or veganism. Mm-hmm. But...
And then he's also, Jameson Rabbits also mentions Icarus and Voyeur. What's Voyeur? I don't know that one either.
I actually don't know that one.
Okay. And let's see, Nick H. Heisenberg Pod over on Twitter says, "Outlaw King is a fantastic, gritty, violent masterpiece. Plus, you get extra Florence Pugh and Pine Penis along with some mud."
I mean, you can't beat Pine Penis. Like, what other movies last year had Pine Penis? None.
You really can't. That's got to be up there. Let's see. So, I got two here that I've never heard of that'll be our last suggestion box mention today. Kate, who is Captain Hangry over on Twitter, says the Guernsey... Literary.
Ooh, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
Oh, that's one movie or that's two movies?
That is one movie.
Oh, I thought it was two. Okay, so is that?
That stars Lily James and Dario from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
The second Dario. The one that was in Haunting of Hill House, the oldest brother.
Got it.
I like that movie. It's a nice romance movie. I don't love it. It's good. Like, you should definitely see it because I think it's good. Like, it's Lily James. Like, she's gorgeous and Dario is Dario, but... It's interesting. It's an interesting movie.
Okay.
It's set post-World War II, but, like, the intro scene is during World War II. And it tells the story of, like, this island of Guernsey that you've really, literally never heard of before. And it tells, like, okay, here's what happened during World War II and, like, kind of their aftermath.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, look, man, this was a lot of fun to do. You know, I mean, if I'm going to be talking Netflix, I got to have you or Caleb on or both. So I really appreciate you joining me.
Okay. I love Caleb. Caleb has probably seen like 60% of what I've seen. I'm being
That's true. No, you're the dude.
Watch. It's like part of it is because Ashley and I like are in different states, and therefore we need ways to hang out. So it's like, okay, let's just watch TV shows and movies. Like, who gives a shit?
Right, right.
And Caleb is like, I'm gonna go be social with people. So
yeah, what's that all about?
I don't know. We're a Netflix podcast. You're not supposed to be social. That's the point with Netflix. You just sit inside all day and avoid people.
He's got to get it together, man, over there, I tell you. Well, look, Dan, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you? I mean, obviously, I know where to find you. I love you. But tell the rest of the listeners that may not know, where can they find you and Caleb, brother?
Depending on when this comes out, you can find us in a multitude of places. We're doing a guest spot with Epic Film Guys to do a Beast of No Nation review with like three other people. So of course I'm not going to be able to talk about I'm jumbling all over the place, but like, so during live stream for The Cure 3, Nick and I are supposed to review Beast of No Nation and do our top 5 of 2015. Beast of No Nation had to get cut for time because we had technical issues to start the stream. And then if you didn't see our 2015 film when it came out, that got lost into the ether. So we've decided to reconvene for an episode, which is those two things put together.
Okay.
But we're doing that. I don't know when that's hitting exactly, but it should, based off of when you're putting this out, Gerald, it should be coming out for you normal people on the regular feed who are stingy and aren't giving Gerald your Patreon money.
I know. Can you believe these people?
I know. But it should be coming out around the same time. But you can find us at NetflixAndSwill.com. We're currently running a giveaway for a $100 gift card to Netflix.
Ooh.
basically all you have to do is review us on Apple Podcasts. That's it.
Ooh, I think I've already done that though.
Review us, which means we need your name and like you saying words. Like it could be like, fuck this show, 1 star from Joe Blow 76.
I feel like I already did that because I had a misspelling in it or something. And yeah. I just left it.
But the caveat is we have to get 100 total ratings. So like, okay. We have to have 100 total ratings and reviews by the end of 2019. Or no one gets it. So don't fuck it up for everybody.
Yeah, that's the way you should do it, man. All right, well, I love you, man. I mean, it means a lot to me that you came on the show. But not only that, just thank you for your friendship. Thanks for being an awesome dude. And it means the world to me, man. So we did our top 5 Netflix original movies tonight. It was a lot of fun. And I got a lot of homework to do because there was like 3 on your list that I'd never seen?
That sounds... No.
Two I'd never seen. Icarus and Private Life. So, and they're both in my queue, so I want to check them out. And you're going to hopefully see Jim and Andy for me, but I'll leave that up to you.
We'll see.
If you do, hit me up. It's not long. It's like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. All right, that's it, guys. That's this top 5 for 2Ps. Dan, thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks.
A little ghost for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.